Support comes from Ohio State's Ross Heart Hospital, helping to build healthy hearts with the 2013 Wellness Series. Heart disease is the leading cause of death in the United States, and regular physical activity is a great way to prevent it. Details about Ohio State's Wellness Series are at go.osu.edu/series.
Welcome to All Sides with Dan Fisher. Romance fiction has plenty of subgenres. One of the fastest growing revolves around the Amish mystique, especially the women of that world, their burdens, their fantasies, and their loves, all wrapped up in a gossamer prayer covering and plain long dress. The Ohioana Book Festival coming up on May 11th in Columbus alone boasts three Amish romance authors. For more information about the festival, go to our website at wosu.org/allsides. We'll have a link there for you. So what is the allure of the Amish in romance literature? Coming up later, we'll hear from two successful Amish romance authors. Joining us now to talk about this subgenre is Valerie Weaver-Zirker. She's a writer and editor and author of a new book on the topic. It's called The Thrill of the Chaste, The Allure of Amish Romance Novels. Welcome to the show, Valerie.
Thank you for having me, Anne.
So many fun double entendres.
Right.
Instead of the torn bodice, it's the torn bonnet and so forth. I shouldn't say double entendres, but plays on words.
Right. Well, and the books have become known in the media as bonnet rippers.
Bonnet rippers, right.
As the play on the term bodice rippers.
Yeah.
Frankly, you know, the term, I mean, it's a cute one. I think in some ways it misses what's at the heart of Amish romance fiction. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people think that it's kind of 50 Shades of Grey for church ladies, you know, that this is kind of slightly watered down erotica for evangelical Christian women. And in my research and reading of the books and conversations with readers, I found that not to be the case.
So what is Amish romance? What is this subgenre of literature and it's also considered a subgenre of inspirational Christian fiction. It's not just Amish sub, you know, it's not just one of romance.
That's right. And that became very clear to me early on in my research, that most of the books are lodged within Christian fiction or inspirational romance fiction. So they adhere to those conventions. That is, the books are very kind of clean reads. Readers often use that phrase to me to describe the books. You know, their sexuality, sexual interactions are not narrated at all, even between married couples. They're very chaste kind of books. So, you know, they adhere to that convention of Christian fiction. They have happy endings. There's a romance narrative, but there's also this kind of devotional aspect to most of the books, in which the protagonist is kind of on this spiritual kind of journey as well.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and my guest is Valerie Weaver-Zirker. She's the author of Thrill of the Chaste, The Allure of Amish Romance Novels. We have a couple of Amish romance novelists coming up to talk later in the hour. It is the 7th Annual Ohioana Book Festival this Saturday at Fort Hays Metropolitan Education Center in Columbus. For more information, we have a link at wosu.org/allsides. Amazing timeline in terms of the popularity of this genre, Valerie Weaver-Zirker. Let's look at that timeline for a second. Just 13 years ago, just a few books were published in 2000. What changed and when?
Right. In 2002, I think there were just two of these novels published. And by last year, 2012, there were almost 90. So kind of over a 40-fold increase. You know, people sometimes attribute some of the success of the genre to the kind of coverage of the Amish in the wake of the Nickel Mine school shooting in 2006. Other people point to the recession of 2008 to say, you know, there was kind of this rise of nostalgic fiction in general, that tends to happen in kind of periods of economic uncertainty. In my book, I also point to two kind of larger social and cultural forces that I think really contribute to the popularity of the genre. And I can talk about those some, but they're in short called hypermodernity and hypersexualization of popular culture. Those are kind of forces that I say kind of paved the way for the popularity of this genre.
Is this where there's so much of both that we just want to escape from it?
Yeah, readers use that terminology with me a lot, and I found theorists and psychologists and sociologists who kind of pointed to that as well, that the pace of hypermodern life, the kind of change in the pace of, you know, kind of information transfer, communication, digital technology, social change, that readers often are left kind of heaving, you know, heavily and saying, I want to go somewhere else. And so certainly the Amish are perceived by many of us to be kind of the antithesis of this pace, you know, the buggy being the most probably salient metaphor for the Amish kind of rejection of hypermodernity and all of its all of it that it contains.
I guess for a long time, for those among us who were trying to escape that, we would just simply turn to, say, a Jane Austen. You'd have the romance, and you would not have the sex, and you would not have the modernity.
Right. And readers, you know, often said that they enjoy, you know, they're readers of Christian fiction, and so they're finding meaning in other Christian novels as well. They liked Little House on the Prairie when they were young. There was a very popular series named Jeanette, by a woman named Jeanette Oak, Love Comes Softly, that many of them point to. So yeah, the rural setting, the kind of religious subculture that rejects certain parts of culture that especially evangelical Christians often feel ambivalent about, and then certainly the romance element. Those three kind of combine into a pretty alluring mix for readers who are feeling kind of weary and perhaps embattled by popular cultural products that they don't quite agree with.
These are interesting cultural phenomenon, but I'm also thinking someone's pushing these books. There's someone out there making money off these books. And I'm not talking about the novelists necessarily. Someone's marketing them. They found a niche.
It is a really interesting question. You know, you can look at the demand side. What are readers craving? But I think you've hit the nail on the head. Is there's this whole kind of production mechanism, a hyper-modern publishing climate that is birthing these books. You know, publishers are able to bring them out more quickly than they were even probably a decade ago. There are literary agents who are, you know, speaking at Christian writing conferences, and I heard several stories of literary agents who are saying, you know, to their authors who might be writing in another genre, hey, do you know anything about the Amish? Could you write about the Amish? Could you, you know, I think I could sell a book of yours if you would set it in an Amish community. So there's certainly, there is that kind of thing, those things going on in the production side of the equation that really, that's right, we can't ignore.
What does the, to what extent is the audience for this consist of Amish?
That's another really interesting question, and while I don't have any numbers on that, I did a lot of interviews with Amish folks, and I visited, for example, the Bookmobile in Holmes County, Ohio, not too far from you, with the readership of which is mostly Amish, and the librarians there told me that Amish romance novels are being checked out at a very rapid rate. So they're, I think the sense that I got from Amish folks that I talked to is it's often young Amish women in their communities that are reading the books. And I think that does. That raises a lot of really interesting questions about, you know, when you are a young Amish woman reading a book about a protagonist that looks like you, you know, that lives in a community like you, but is written by someone who is not part of your culture. There's just interesting questions raised, I think, about cultural evolution and change in terms of Amish sensibility of related to theology, to religion, just some really interesting questions.
Are there any Amish romance novels written by Amish?
There is one currently Old Order Amish writer writing the novels that are available to a general readership. Her name is Linda Beiler. She lives in central Pennsylvania. Her books are published by a publisher called Good Books. And she had originally self-published some novels kind of based on her own life. And Good Books picks them up and kind of revised them. And her books have been very successful. And are certainly, you know, have an edge in terms of the authenticity, accuracy factor that, you know, those of us who stand outside the culture can't quite approximate.
What does the Amish reading audience think of what is a largely an outsider group of people writing about them?
You know, I found a wide range of Amish opinion on this question. You know, there are certainly loyal Amish readers of Amish fiction. You know, a lot of the authors claim they have a lot of Amish readers who write to them, who and I, you know, read some Amish book reviews of the books in Amish newspapers that were very positive. You know, are they relieved to have clean fiction as well for their daughters to read and for them to read? You know, they share a lot of those kinds of moral sensibilities with even evangelical Christians. On the other hand, I talked to a lot of Amish folks who are either amused by the phenomenon, kind of say, you know, why would anybody want to write books about us, to those who are indeed offended and feel like, you know, their way of life is being packaged for popular consumption, that maybe readers are missing central aspects of their faith. So it was really kind of across the board.
Well, it's sort of a voyeuristic kind of a tourism in a way. I mean, the tourism of the Amish life is rampant now.
Right. And one reader I spoke with said, you know, one of the reasons I like Amish fiction is if I'm a tourist, if I go to an Amish community and participate in tourist activities, I can only kind of still stand on the outside. When I read an Amish novel, I feel as if I'm, you know, getting into their homes, kind of experiencing their lives. So there, it's a kind of intensified, one scholar called it tourism of the imagination, that's happening.
What extent is anybody out there judging whether or not anyone's getting it right?
Yeah.
Are you just using the reviews in those Amish newspapers, how do you know, do we know, if anyone is?
Right. You know, the Amish folks that I talked to who had read some of the novels could quickly, you know, pretty quickly point to details that were wrong, you mm-hmm. know, little things that that they would laugh at and say, well, you know, we don't call each other Mr. and Mrs., or, you know, we don't dress like the way they describe the dress being in a particular community. You know, I talked to some scholars of Amish life who also could point to both kind of little inaccuracies and then certainly larger ones. A lot of the authors have an Amish person read their manuscript either before it goes to print or somewhere in the process, and obviously hope that kind of vetting process will increase, you know, their level of accuracy and authenticity. And I think that's a good step. Certainly there are, I think, larger issues that are just hard to get our minds around as outsiders, and what is truly an authentic representation of another culture, you know, who's to say? I think there are some larger kind of ethical issues involved there that are kind of hard to get our minds around.
Because most writers of these romances or these kinds of stories about Amish are outsiders, do they tend to use outsiders as a protagonist or at least as a vehicle in their writing?
Some do, yeah. Some of the novels have a non-Amish protagonist who is interacting with an Amish community in some way. Sometimes it's the story of an Amish protagonist's journey away from her community. Sometimes all the characters in the book, or at least all the main characters, are Amish themselves. So it really varies.
My guest is Valerie Weaver-Zerker. She's the author of Thrill of the Chase, The Allure of Amish Romance Novels. Three Amish romance novelists are participating in the 7th Annual Ohioana Book Festival this Saturday. You can learn more about the book festival at our website link at wosu.org/allsides. Coming up, we're going to hear from one of those novelists, Karen Harper. She's the author of her latest book, I should say, is called Finding Mercy. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Support comes from the Physicians Free Clinic and Voluntary Care Network, providing charity medical care for Central Ohio's uninsured patients. More about joining the Columbus Medical Association Foundation in supporting the clinic is at goodhealthcolumbus.org.
It's not just habit that makes you check your iPhone every 3 minutes, you know.
Technology does have the potential to draw us into darker addictions.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. As consumers jump from one fixation to the next, companies are cashing in. That story, the rest of the day's business news, and the numbers from Wall Street next time on Marketplace from APM.
This afternoon at 6 on 89.7 NPR News. A basic membership for 89.7 NPR News starts at just $60 and comes with our airfare program guide and a grocery tote. Visit WOSU.org.
Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The allure of Amish romance subgenre in literature is growing. Barnes & Noble lists more than 65 titles on the web alone when I checked yesterday. In 2012, a new Amish romance novel appeared on the market about every 4 days. What is the allure? Still with us is Valerie Weaver-Zirker, a writer and editor and author of a new book about the Amish subgenre of romance literature. Her book is called The Thrill of the Chaste, The Allure of Amish Romance Novels. Once again, Valerie, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Anne.
And joining us now is New York Times and USA Today bestselling author and Columbus resident, Karen Harper. 8 of her suspense novels take place in Ohio Amish country. Karen Harper is a former high school and Ohio State University English instructor. She is the winner of the Mary Higgins Clark Award for her Amish novel, Dark Angel. Her latest book is called Finding Mercy, and it is also up for Best Contemporary Cover of the Year, which I learned about by complimenting her on the cover. Welcome to the show, Karen.
Thank you, Anne.
It is a very beautiful cover of a lavender field.
Lavender fields. This heroine grows lavender. I always like to have my Amish women have some career.
So, I'm so glad you could join us today. One of the things I wondered about was how you find, a place in a novel. How you're not Amish,
right?
So how you pick a person as a protagonist and how that works for you? Are they usually Amish? Are they usually outsiders, or what?
I've done all variations. Dark Road Home, my very first book, it was a woman, policewoman from Columbus, who had a case gone very bad, and she was just taking care of a quilt shop in Amish country. Became involved with the Amish and fell in love with an Amish man. One of the big allures, I write heavy suspense in my novels. They are mystery novels also. One of the allures, I think, in my books is forbidden love. In other words, it's forbidden for an Amish woman or an Amish man to fall in love and certainly marry outside of their group. You can be shunned for that. Shunning is such an interesting aspect of the way their culture works. And so forbidden love, I think, is an aspect of these Amish novels. Now, probably not the ones that are straight inspirational with both characters being Amish. I've done that, too.
I suppose it just so happens, Valerie, but both Karen and the other novelist we're going to talk with later on, Amanda Flower, both of they like mystery. Karen Harper, especially suspense. Is that a popular vehicle in this?
It is. There are several writers writing the kind of suspense mystery, either light kind of cozy mystery or kind of heavier suspense novels that have Amish characters and settings. And some of them would fall within that kind of inspirational fiction genre. Others fall more into the general general market romance genre. So, and there's lots of kind of subgenres opening up within those as well. There is an Amish vampire series.
Oh my gosh!
There are some Amish and angel.
The zombies are just around the corner. Then
what's that? Amish zombies? Yeah. I haven't heard of those yet.
Well, just wait. In romance in general, in that genre in general, there's often a forbidden love angle to it, isn't there?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. That's part of the appeal. Yeah.
Some Amish I read don't necessarily appreciate even a subtle evangelical spirit in some of the stories. It's not their way to proselytize and that sort of a thing. Karen Harper, for your purposes, to what extent do you get into the religion, into the faith aspect of Amish life?
If you're going to write Amish, it's such a huge part of their culture and their beings and their individuality that you definitely get into it. I do not have the gospel message per se in the book, which some of the books do. But to be Amish is to have this tremendous faith, which is part of their allure and part of their mystery.
How did you start to write in this vein?
All of my suspense novels deal with an enclave culture. I've done Appalachia. I love small towns. And we visit Amish country a lot. We go every year and stay for a while. And I started observing what a fantastic thing this would be to write about the Amish. The other neat thing about them in suspense is they don't just call the cops if there's a problem. They don't really trust the police. They live isolated lives. They do not have a phone to call for help if something happens. There's nothing like a lantern-lit dark barn for a scene. You get out there and you don't have city lights. It's just they can't get away quickly in a buggy. It's just perfect for suspense.
And Valerie Weaver-Zerker, a lot of Amish books are in series, the kind of the small town series sort of a thing.
Right. There were actually at least 23 new series that began in 2012, which does give you a sense of the, you know, kind of longevity of this genre. It's not going away. There are new series starting all the time. And readers talk to me about the appeal of series as opposed to single kind of standalone novels. You know, they like following the journey of characters through three books or more, you know, rather than having to say goodbye to the characters at the end of the novel. So, yes, the appeal of series is really high.
So, Kieran Harper, you think of yourself more as a suspense writer in the Amish genre.
I do. But there's a definite love story in each book. Sometimes two.
What kind of suspense do you tell? What kind of stories? What are they?
Some of them are actually murder mysteries. One of them was solving barn arsons, which was inspired by actual things going on in Pennsylvania. So it just varies. I'm writing a book next where it has to do with Black Baby Market. So it's
wow. There's,
and there are hate crimes against the Amish. I did a book called Dark Harvest where there were hate crimes against Amish children. This was before the Nickel Mines tragedy. You can't imagine, I can't, people being cruel and hating these gentle, simple people who are peaceful and peace-loving, but it does happen.
And that does play out in a lot of books, doesn't it, Valerie?
The aspect of kind of crimes against the Amish.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, I think not as much maybe in the inspirational fiction genre. I don't know if it's because it, you know, feels like a really dark topic. I'm trying to think. You know, I think more frequent in the kind of inspirational romance fiction genre are stories of kind of gentler stories of family conflict or a protagonist's identity crisis, you know, whether to remain Amish or not. But certainly, I would think within the suspense subgenre and mystery, that would be the case.
The books tend to revolve around women as a rule, right?
They do, although some kind of toggle back and forth between a male protagonist perspective and a female one. So I did, you know, discover that there are definitely male readers of Amish romance fiction. It's there are male voices or male protagonists that become, you know, whose stories become central to the books. But by and large, yes, there are mostly female protagonists and the stories kind of of their internal lives and desires.
You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Kieran Harper, you toggle back and forth, right?
I do. I have male point of view as well as women point of view. Yeah, heroine is definitely key, but yes, I do.
And how do you do that? I mean, do you just identify, how do you come up with your male characters in a world that's so far away from the way you live? At least you're female. There's the gender identification there,
right? Well, in some cases, which is the majority of Amish books, I think I've had an Amish character, and they had their romance had gone wrong early. And he had betrayed her. And so then part of the struggle is, are they getting back together? Finding Mercy, this latest book, actually has a whistleblower, a witness protection guy, who is being hidden among the Amish. And of course, the heroine starts to fall for him. Well, you can't have that. That's a really tragic situation among the Amish. And actually, one of the fun things about Finding Mercy was they go on the run to Florida. I don't know if you know that there are snowbirds Amish snowbirds in the winter in Sarasota, Florida, in an enclave called Pinecraft.
Well, I've actually seen been in Sarasota in the winter and have seen and wondered, where did they come from?
Yeah, they get on the bus and they go down from Ohio and Indiana and Pennsylvania.
There's lots of stories out there. What about the outsider influence in these novels, Valerie Weaver Zerker? Is that pretty common that there's an outsider that triggers some kind of story?
Yes. I mean, there is often, I think Karen is right that the story of forbidden love is probably less frequent in kind of inspirational or Christian fiction, but it is there. So, you know, there's a frequent storyline that the Amish protagonist falls in love with an English that is a non-Amish man, and they need to determine, you know, what they're going to do. Sometimes she leaves, sometimes he becomes Amish, sometimes they go, you know, they kind of move into what is kind of a liminal space between Amish and English. They become Mennonite, or they become Beachy Amish, which is a group that drives cars and has electricity but still has a lot of the plain dressing and kind of traditional lifestyle choices of the Amish. So, the presence of outsiders is definitely not uncommon in a lot of the books.
You're once again listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. If you want to join the conversation, if you are a romance fiction with an Amish subgenre lover, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. Give us a call and tell us why you love it. Maybe you're a critic of it. Maybe you think that there's a problem with it. Give us a call again, 614-292-8513. Last year, a couple of so-called reality shows about the Amish were on television, the Amish Mafia and Breaking Amish, and those were sort of bad boy looks, however inaccurate, at the culture. Is that an aspect of Amish romance subgenre, Karen? I'm sorry, Valerie.
Well, you know, I think the audience for Breaking Amish and the Amish Mafia is, frankly, pretty separate from the audience, at least, of inspirational Amish romance novels. I don't think the same people who are reading Beverly Lewis and Wanda Brunstetter, who are some of the big names in Amish fiction, I don't think they're the same folks that are sitting down and watching Amish Mafia. Or if they're watching an episode and kind of being horrified. It's a little oversimplistic to say, but in some ways, I think Amish reality shows major in bad Amish boys and inspirational Amish fiction in good Amish girls. Again, that's kind of too simplistic, but I think there's some truth in that, that it's a pretty different genre or different approach to the Amish.
Is there an Amish romance writer out there anywhere who actually does dally in sex at all?
In sex.
Yes.
That was good. You know, there are a couple what are called kind of sexy Amish novels or novellas. There is, for example, a writer who wrote an Amish novel actually in the 80s that Romance House published. And, you know, the cover, you wouldn't have had any idea that there was an Amish setting or Amish characters. It was kind of the traditional bodice ripper cover. And that book, for example, has been repackaged and republished by a publisher called Sinful Moments Press, actually. And there's an Amish woman on the cover. It looks very much like the kind of traditional inspirational Amish novel, but is, in fact, it's quite sensual, quite sexy, very full of heat and erotica in some ways. So there are a couple of people. I mean, Danielle Steele, actually, her most recent book has an Amish setting in it for at least part of the novel. I haven't read it yet. But it's, so yes, there are, and there are also increasing numbers of gay and lesbian Amish titles that are emerging from either gay and lesbian houses or being self-published, which, you know, of course, inspirational Amish fiction readers would probably not be reading. It's a kind of different audience.
It's a different audience. Karen Harper, how do you feel about your audience? How do you envision them? What do they look like? Who are they?
It's a very broad readership because I pull from romance, from suspense, and actually I have a kind of a cross. I write historical novels also. I get a crossover from some of them. So, mm-hmm. But I do get the occasional letter from Amish people. It's always a letter. It's no way email, of course. And The funny one I had most recently was that I had mixed up hay and straw. So they read. They read in a different way.
And they want to instruct.
Yes, absolutely. And I asked one woman one time if she would read my books before. And she said, I don't think the bishop would approve. So she turned me down.
But did you say you do have people who read that read them for you?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I do the Buckeye Book Fair every year for Saturday in November in Worcester. A lot of Amish come in there and they come and talk to me. Well, your last book was, you know, da 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 da. And actually, I was shaking in my boots once because the bishop and his wife did come and buy one. And they came back the next year, did not mention the book, but talked to me very in a friendly way. So I figured, hey, maybe I passed that one.
Yeah. Is that desire? I mean, do people who write in this subgenre, Valerie, as a rule, like Karen Harper, care what their subject matter thinks about how they're depicted?
I think so. I mean, the authors that I spoke with were quite concerned about issues of accuracy, making sure they get their facts right, not wanting to offend the Amish. You know, there's a variety of levels of that. I think some of them, you know, feel like maybe one or two trips to an Amish area and some visits to shops, give them enough research background, which, you know, of course, I would say is probably not the case. But I'd say by and large, they do care what Amish people think of their writing. Some of them, I have to say, do write and hope that they have Amish readers out of a kind of desire to bring what they perceive as the gospel to the Amish. There are writers writing, and this is probably less common now than before, but that really feel like the Amish aren't completely Christian and maybe need to hear the gospel.
I would just say, too, that I used to hang out at the Helping Hands Quilt Shop in Berlin, Ohio, because a lot of the women are friendly and would talk to you. Got some ideas there. But when they found out that I was an Anabaptist, which they are, oh, my goodness, things changed. They just told me more. They trusted me more.
Interesting.
Yeah, because they have a tremendous persecution history in Europe for saying that baby baptism was not the way, adult baptism was the way, persecuted, burned at the stake, drowned. I mean, really bad. So that's why they came to America in the first place in the 1700s.
Karen, Valerie Weaver-Zerker, do we have any sense about how this literature, and the proliferation has been dramatic now, what kind of impact it has on the Amish in general?
Well, in some ways, I think it's too early to say for sure. There are some writers who've identified a general Amish kind of cultural approach to romance that is quite different, probably, from what if an Amish reader is reading an Amish romance novel, their cultural conception of romance is likely less based on emotion and kind of feeling than what they are reading in the book. I think there is a very real possibility that kind of Amish theological understandings of salvation, of interaction with the world are changing slowly if more and more Amish people are reading the novels. Just in terms of how it's affecting the Amish, I think it's intensifying tourism. I've talked to Amish people who say, you know, I had some English people at my house the other day because, you know, they serve meals to English people, and they say, you know, these guests are much more interested in our lives, and they feel like they know more about our lives because they've read Amish novels. So I think intensification of tourism is probably one of the results.
You're listening to Valerie Weaver-Zerker. She's the author of Thrill of the Chaste, The Allure of Amish Romance Novels. Also with us in the studio is Karen Harper. She's the author of a new book. It's called Finding Mercy. Coming up, we're going to hear from another author, Amanda Flower, the author of A Plain Death. Both Karen Harper and Amanda Flower will be at the 7th Annual Ohioana Book Festival this Saturday. For more information about that, you can go to the link at our website at WOSU.org/allsides. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
What do you do when you're little and you know you can't be like your mother? I adore and am proud of my mother, but what she wants from me is blind adherence to the mystifying virtue of seemly behavior.
On the next Fresh Air, Patricia Volk talks about her new memoir, Shocked, about her relationship with her mother. And we'll hear an excerpt of a recent lecture by Martin Scorsese about film history. Join us.
Today at noon on 89.7 NPR News.
Support comes from the Homeport Noble on Long condominiums, offering homeownership opportunities in the King Lincoln District, featuring green design buildings within walking distance of local stores and restaurants. Details at homeportohio.org/NOBO on Long.
89.7 NPR News is your all-day NPR news station, bringing you news and information 7 days a week and always streaming at WOSU.org. Does the Constitution have what it takes to keep up with modern America? Join Peter Sagal, host of NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, as he hits the road to find out. Traveling across the country by motorcycle, Sagal searches for where the U.S. Constitution lives, how it works, and how it doesn't. This week, he explores whether or not the federal government has grown too big. Watch Constitution USA with Peter Sagal, Tuesday night at 9 on WOSU-TV.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We are talking about the popularity of the romance literature subgenre of the Amish romance. If you have a question or comment, want to join the conversation, 614-292-8513, or you could email us at allsides@wosu.org. Still with us, Valerie Weaver-Zerker. She's a writer and an editor and author of The Thrill of the Chase, The Allure of Amish Romance Novels. Once again, Valerie, thanks again for joining us.
Thanks for having me,
Anne. And also still with us in the studio here is New York Times and USA Today bestselling author and Columbus resident, Karen Harper. Her latest book is Finding Mercy. Karen, once again, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And joining us now is Agatha-nominated mystery writer Amanda Flower. Her latest book, A Plain Death, was inspired in part by her own move to Ohio's Amish country to work at a small college. Welcome to the show, Amanda.
Thank you so much for having me.
Your protagonist is based in part on your own experiences working at a small college in Ohio's Amish country. In A Plain Death, that young woman seems to fit in very easily with at least one contingent of the community. In your experience, is that typical?
Probably not. The Amish is a very much a separate community. When I moved there, they were neighbors and welcoming, but probably not to the extent they welcome my protagonist, Chloe, as, a part of the family. And I think the reason that they welcome her is because they have a couple of young people in the family that have left the Amish. So that's how she connects with the family. And that's, for myself, my connection with the Amish. When I lived in Mount Vernon, where the story is set, mm-hmm. I had a friend that had took in a runaway Amish boy, a fellow librarian. So that's how I kind of connected with the Amish community as well.
How do you describe where you fall in the continuum of the Amish romance mystery genre or subgenre?
Well, I started my writing career as strictly a cozy mystery author, which a cozy is just a mystery where the violence and most of the the suspenseful action takes place off page, so it's lighter, like a Janet Ivanovich kind of novel. So when I was approached to write Amish fiction, I said, well, can I write it my way, which is going to be a humorous, cozy novel? And they were open to it, and I was asked to write it because I had ties to the Amish community.
In this one, I would say a lot of the humor comes from the grandfather.
Yes.
Who is a little more liberal than mm-hmm. the rest of that particular, do you call it a sect, Amish sect, or that group?
The district, yes.
The district, right.
Mm-hmm.
There's another aspect of your story that's interesting to me, and I wonder how typical it is. And Valerie Weaver-Zerker and, of course, Karen Harper hop in if you have some thoughts about this, too. But you contrast modernity, the technology that mm-hmm. Chloe, your protagonist, embraces so much. That's what she is. She's a computer geek with the Amish way of life. And I wonder, how conscious that is and how much, as you look forward with this series, how much that will be a part of it.
I was very conscious in doing that because I think, you know, the Amish culture comes up against that all the time. You can go through Holmes County and you may see a teenager who hasn't necessarily decided to be baptized Amish yet, and they may have a cell phone in their hand. So they're, you know, they're forced to face this technology and make these decisions. And kind of Chloe, this computer geek that's 100%, you know, into servers and iPads and all that stuff, is kind of in this situation where the family has to kind of adjust to someone that's so different from them. So it's just a little more dramatic and stark contrast.
It seemed like she kind of got away from her technology a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Well, partly she had to because of the bad connections.
Right, right. Which is true to life. When I lived in Mount Vernon, when I first moved there, it was much smaller, so my cell phone didn't work, and so a lot of that was true to life, and I would have to go out and stand on a hill to get any reception.
My cell phone does not work in Holmes County.
Yeah.
It's a conspiracy. Valerie Weaver-Zirker, in general, how much does the play of technology versus the life of the Amish come into play, that contrast?
Well, I think that's really key, both to the appeal of the books and certainly to the content of a lot of them. You know, the English character that's enslaved to his or her digital devices, you know, coming up against these folks who are surprisingly free of these, you know, these devices that the rest of us can't quite get away from. But I think just the basic appeal relates to the sense that the Amish have managed to reject hyper-modern living in a way that some of us wish we could, or at least could do more of. And so, you know, certainly the points of Amish life that fascinate us, that baffle us, that maybe appall us, say a lot about us, you know, those of us who are on the outside, that what we find lacking in our own lives is often what we kind of latch on to in Amish life.
614-292-8513 is the number to call. We have just a few minutes left. If you have a comment, question for our guests, you're welcome to join the conversation. You can also email us. You can check out our Facebook page as well. That might be a little bit quicker. Karen, you've said that rural isolation of the Amish allow for some pretty scary setups. And
yes. Mm-hmm.
I know... Amanda Flower, you probably found the same thing in your work. Karen, how does that work? Why is that? You mentioned the lantern in the barn, which, yes.
Yes, and the fact that the characters in Finding Mercy are looking up at the stars and actually seeing them, and the moonlight is it in the scary, great big cornfield. It just all works so well sometimes. The police procedural novels are great, but all of that, it's great to dump all of that technology sometimes and have a real mystery that's solved by people's hearts and minds, you know. So it's just an ideal setting. And that's another reason I like rural settings if I'm not doing Amish.
Yeah, Amanda, the same thing. I mean, when there was the crash of the car and the buggy that sets off the mystery in your, a plane death, no one sees it but one person, and she doesn't remember it very well because it's in the middle of nowhere.
Right, right. And I, like Karen said, I agree. It makes it, for a mystery writer or a suspense writer, in some ways it makes it easier for us to plot out the story, because in real life there's all these camera phones and technology and there's all this stuff that there's almost too much information. Like when they were solving the Boston bombing, there was all this information the police had to go through. And we have the opposite situation when you write Amish mysteries. So it's more of talking to people in the community who most of the time don't want to talk to the protagonist. So it, you know, you can draw it out and make it more interesting.
And I love doing small town sheriffs. Granted, Ohio small town sheriffs call in the Bureau of Criminal Investigation if they need help, absolutely. And I have characters who are from BCI and come into the community. But I don't know, it just it lends a whole new level of suspense to.
Yeah, and Amanda, you have a great small town police chief.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A female.
Yes. Yeah. And which, I mean, is definitely unusual, but I wanted it to be a woman too, because it's kind of a contrast to the Amish, which is very much a male-dominated culture, so I wanted her to, you know, for her to talk to the Amish is very difficult. So
I do see how you wrote the book. It does make me interested in knowing what happens to some of these characters going forward in a series.
Oh, thank you so much.
There's some quirky characters, and I think that the police chief is one of them. Something that comes up in your book, and that I'm wondering, Karen, Valerie Weaver-Zerker, if this is the case typically, is how there is an aspect of the Amish that look down on the rest of us. That if you're an outsider, you're just not quite up to snuff. And in your book, there's a scene where the protagonist gets to meet some paragon of the community, an older woman, a paragon of the Amish community, and people are like, wow, I can't even believe she talked to you. Valerie, how much is that used in the course of storytelling this way?
You know, that's an interesting point. I don't know that I've thought about it necessarily in the books that I read, whether there's a kind of superiority complex among the Amish characters. I do think that's one contrast to reality, Amish reality shows like Breaking Amish, where there is a sense in which the Amish characters want to become English. You know, the narrative suspense is all about them getting away and as far away as they can from kind of Amish lifestyle codes and wanting to be something other than who they are. And certainly in the novels, I think there is sometimes a sense of kind of looking askance at Amish or at English characters in the novels, and in some ways, as English readers of the novels, we get to experience looking at our way of life, our non-Amish way of life, through these Amish eyes. I don't know that it's a real frequent mechanism, the kind of superiority thing, but it's an interesting question.
On the other hand, it can work the other way. I know. Because the Amish only go through eighth grade education, a lot of people look down on them. But a lot of them are specialists in things where they've just done it themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Ed in Baltimore, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
No, thank you. First of all, cell phones will work in Holmes County if you're on the right bill.
Okay. And if you have the right carrier.
Thanks for the tip.
And if you have the right carrier.
Yeah, which I don't.
It's interesting that Amanda, I think it was, that was mentioning the technology issue with the Amish and the computers. And there's one of the major furniture stores there that we have frequented in the past, where you go in and there's this great big center section, like a lot of the box stores have, where gentlemen are all sitting at the computers and they're doing their drawings and looking at their customer base. But my brother's car wouldn't start. They had to go outside to a little building outside with a key and unlock and use the telephone, because they weren't allowed to use the telephone. Mm-hmm. So it's an interesting conundrum sometimes to see what is and isn't allowed in a particular district of the Amish.
Amanda, you in your story, there is that group, I don't know, it's a telephone shed or something like that that people can use?
Yeah, and when I was researching for the novel, you know, I had relationships with the Amish, but, you know, I never really understood the differences in the districts before I started writing about them. And it just, to realize that the bishop and the deacon, the leaders of the church, make the decisions for the districts that may be, you know, a few families. And they could say to one family that you can use the lawnmower for work if you need to mow your lawn. But the next house over says you're not allowed to use a lawnmower, but you can use a weed whacker. So it's up to the – so for a person, like an English person, that's hard to grasp that you would make a decision that seems so minor about a lawnmower by what someone tells you to do. But it's very much their culture, and I could see, like, them using a computer for work inside the building, but not have a telephone because the bishop made that decision for that district.
And they could use a computer to design, but they can't go on the internet.
Right.
That kind of a thing. Ed in Baltimore, thank you so much. Amanda, you were complimented on how you explained why one of your characters left the Amish community. It was Timothy in your story. How did you write it to elicit that praise? What do you make of that?
Well, I think what the journal article was mentioning is a lot of people have a romanticized view of the Amish religion, especially in Christian fiction and what I write. And I made a distinction that some, not all, but some Amish believe in faith and salvation through works, as opposed to faith and salvation through grace. So for the district that my character was in, he decided to leave because he wanted to have guaranteed faith and salvation through grace, as opposed to having to follow all these really strict rules in order to earn his way to get into heaven.
Now, Valerie Weaver-Zerker, is that something we talked about that was kind of controversial?
It is, and it's a real common journey of protagonists in the genre. Even if they remain Amish, they kind of move out of what evangelicals would call a works-based faith to this kind of saving knowledge of Jesus Christ. And it is, to a lot of Amish people, it can be an offensive kind of distinction to make, because, mm-hmm. of course, they don't perceive their faith and their works, or their faith and their spirituality and their lifestyle to be kind of bifurcated or divided in the same way that maybe evangelical Christians do. And some of it, I think, has to do with a kind of evangelical history. There have been a lot of evangelical churches and individuals that have themselves moved out of fundamentalism. And one historian who was writing about Amish fiction said that in some ways, evangelical movement away from fundamentalist kind of codes of right living is mirrored in the journey of these protagonists who move from, you know, rules of, you know, no car ownership or no electricity to a kind of more warm-hearted spirituality. I think it's a potentially offensive kind of journey to at least some Amish folks.
Well, Valerie Weaver-Zerker, thanks so much for joining us today to talk about it. It's been interesting.
Thank you, Anne.
Valerie Weaver-Zerker, she's the author of Thrill of the Chase, The Allure of Amish Romance Novels. Also, Amanda Flower, the author of A Plain Death. Amanda, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
And Karen Harper, author of Finding Mercy. Karen, thanks for being in the studio with me.
I enjoyed it, Anne. Thank you.
Both Amanda and Karen will be at the 7th Annual Ohioana Book Festival. For more information, go to wosu.org/allsides. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We'll